Or do you have to be sort of up at the level of Ken Shackle to get one for testing? Ken's a really rigorous scientist. So.
Yeah, we're not quite ready to sell them yet. We're in the beta testing and working with several growers, Gallo and others, to test them in commercial fields. I've had some trouble extracting some of them from my own research, so it's going to be a little bit before we'll, you know, they'll be generally available. Partly because when you do MEMS manufacture, you have to do a large run. It's a, you know, like a chip manufacturer. You don't just ask them for 150 of them. When we put in an order to have them made, it's going to have to be a pretty large number. So it's not a gradual type of manufacturer situation. So. But if you on the website there, I think there is a place you can click on a waiting list to be on the, you know.
And once it's finally released, can you get overnight delivery?
Probably if you pay
it. No, people ask that. This sensor's about a year out. Okay, when it's ready, can I get overnight delivery? That's a great example, though, of stuff that developed by research scientists like all of us in the lab, and then all what it takes to be a commercial sensor. My favorite story is people tell me all the time, oh, I've got this great new sensor, and it's working, and I've got it set up in my lab, but the data's terrific. And so you come and visit my lab, and you go over there, and they say, okay, don't touch it. It's working. Yeah, well, that's a long ways to get something that you can sell to people. So we also worked a lot on thermal imaging and in particular temperature as an indicator of water stress. And, of course, this is widely used by lots of people. Instead of hundreds of papers, there are thousands of papers on this. And, again, lots of potential. And to me, this is a great thing because this is, gets into environmental biophysics because there's not hormones involved. There's just the evaporation of water, which cools things. And I think the studies on this are as old as the psychometric chart itself. 50, 60, 100 years ago, people were looking at temperature as an indication of water stress in plants. So since this is Jens's a workshop, so I had to bring some stuff. This is a FLIR thermal imaging camera. This is the camera I took this picture with. And, well, here, I'm not... Can you see me in the image? I'm pretty hot up here. You can pass this around, and you can, if you haven't used one of these, I recommend them. I forgot to bring it, but I have a little attachment for my cell phone that I think costs $200, and now I get thermal images right on my cell phone. That particular camera is about $1,000, but you can get them cheaper, and the difference in price just depends on how good they are. But with this, you poof. Click a button, download the image, and you get this. So I think for teaching purposes and for certain research uses, it's just terrific. This happened to be a flat of petunia plugs that were growing in the greenhouse. And this is shadows from the bars of the greenhouse. These shadows are moving across this as the sun moves. But just to show you the potential of this, here's the thermal image of it. And if you look and look, you can see the hot spots are where there's no plugs. That's the bright yellow. 37C, and you go right next to it, it's 25C. There's some hot black pots in the back, up around 37C. Huge differences in temperature, and this is fast and characterizes those differences. One thing, if you study this picture long enough, down in that corner is a yellow, which indicates maybe 30 degrees C. You know how people water a flat of plugs and they don't get the corners exactly right? I think these plugs right here, even though they look fine, they were water stressed. So there's the potential to use this kind of a thermal image to detect water stress. And this is amazing. It's stuff you can, after you get one of these, you spend a whole day pointing it at stuff and... And you learn a lot, I think, by doing that through the principles of this. Here's a cucumbers. It happened in the greenhouse. Here's more bars in the greenhouse. So what's the thermal image of that look like? Well, there it is. You can see the shadows. And look at the metal here. The is almost 40-some degrees C. Huge, really sensitive. Now, if we're using this for water stress, it's always the ratio of the tissue temperature to the air temperature. And this doesn't give you the air temperature. You have to have that from some other way. And even though these cameras are particularly accurate in a relative sense, in an absolute sense, they're much less accurate. You can calibrate them to a surface. But it shows you the potential of this kind of thermal imaging. The potential long-term is to download it and count pixels on a computer. Here's two kinds of lettuce. Now, these are more examples of the interesting things you learn from this. Now, it's not a class, so we won't have a test, but here's green lettuce and a real dark purple lettuce. I think that one's called Marshall. It's full of anthocyanin. What do you think the thermal image looks like from these plants? I thought, well, surely all this anthocyanin, the leaves are going to heat up more. Those are inactive photosynthetic pigments. Will I be able to tell the difference? No. There's plenty of stomates in those leaves with anthocyanins, and when you do the thermal image, you can't tell the difference. There's a case where they're visually different, but not thermally different. And I have one final slide here. Under LEDs, and of course people think, oh, LEDs, there's no heat, you know, but this was white LEDs. This, even the background here was about 27 C, and in this particular case, the wet soil was colder than the leaves. So it gives you, there's a lot of environmental biophysics going on here that you, when you get the image, you think about the principles and interpret the data. So I love these cameras, and I if you don't have one, you should buy one and play around with it. Put in for a grant, even if it's one to use with the one in your cell phone doesn't have quite the pixel resolution, but it's good enough. And I guarantee you're going to walk all over and take pictures with it. So here's a field. This is a big project right now. It's called the GrapeX Project. It was funded by NASA, the wineries, Gallo Wineries, and the USDA. In my school, Utah State University is involved. Here's wine grapes, there's eddy covariance, there's thermal imaging between the rows. The soil between the rows was 60 degrees Celsius, and of course the grapes are 30 degrees cooler than that. In this particular project, there's multiple infrared sensors all over the place, pointed at the soil, pointed at the ground, for continuous real-time measurements of tissue temperatures. And I could pass this one around, too. So if you don't want to pay for one of those, you go and get one of these guns, and I think you can get these maybe for $20, and it shows you temperatures. Here, and pass that one around, too. Well, I was sort of nervous about that, but I snuck them through. This says we bring these to other countries, and the customs are really sensitive, so they all say demo only, not for sale. They worry that it might sell them, not have to pay the import tax. And this is one more. This is a meter with an apogee sensor on it that gives you a digital readout of things. Now, this is the next step where this integrates everything in the picture. Jan, here, you can pass this one around to push the start button. The cheaper sensors work okay as long as the range is just a couple degrees with the temperature of the sensor. But if the range gets bigger, and if you want to know the temperature differences to 0.1 C, then you need to buy a more expensive sensor. Then I'll show you that in these upcoming slides. Here's a case where these sensors work wonderfully. This is a field of corn in Illinois that they're doing water stress on this. Apogee Instruments, and that's a company I've started, so that's full disclosure, sells this sensor. This was a paper from 2009, 9 years ago, about doing canopies to model conductance. not just single leaf, but the average of all the leaves in the field of view with a sensor, and calculating stomatal conductance the same way a clamp-on meter would from biophysical principles. What a great potential, continuous real-time measurements of a canopy stomatal conductance. If we could do this, this is terrific. John Norman is, I don't know how many of you know him, but he's a retired professor of environmental biophysics at the University of Wisconsin, and he's a great scientist. I really liked working with him on this. This became quite a highly cited paper. So how does this work? Well, first of all, canopy stomatal conductance. As I think everybody knows, you can buy single-leaf clamp-on meters, and they're great. They do what they say they're going to do. They measure photosynthesis, transpiration, and stomatal conductance of that leaf at that moment in time. And now Decagon Meter came out with this much lower cost little clip-on pyrometer. It's not nearly as good as these steady state pyrometers, but it works. And wow, this is great. But now you got to extrapolate to the whole canopy for the whole day. Imagine from a single spot and a single leaf for a moment. And there's the challenge, trying to extrapolate to the canopy. That's why trying to do the canopy is so powerful in an automated sense. Here's some data. It's that same field. This is, the blue dots are a model of stomatal conductance with sunlit and shaded leaves. There's multiple models in this. And the red dots are measurements from the infrared sensor. And I'm not showing you all the math and the equations, but you back calculate stomatal conductance from the temperature of the leaves. You can tell how that, if you're measuring wind, radiation, VPD, you can tell what the stomatal conductance would have to be to get that leaf temperature. So this is morning and night, and not surprisingly, stomates open in the middle of the day, close. The red dots are measured, and this is the stomatal conductance ratio of measured stomatal conductance to potential, modeled. Again, it's a ratio. So this corner's drying out, and this is like 0.6. The stomates are 60% of their potential, and the green dot's the average for the day. Another day, you can look at the stomates closing in the afternoon. This is water stressed. Then they irrigate, and the numbers went close to one, and it worked great in this crop, in this condition, for continuous real-time measurements of stomatal conductance. Now, I am showing you the best data and the best crop. Corn is a good crop for this because lots of leaves to measure. Here is the whole daily numbers for a whole life cycle of corn. Remember, one is well-watered, zero is water-stressed. These are irrigations, so it went down. This is the fraction of the canopy, so it's 100% leaves. You irrigate it, went up. Look at here. Kept going down, down, really water-stressed here, and then it rained, and it went up, and it rained some more. So this line gradually slopes down over the life cycle, and we don't think that's instrument problems. We think it's because old corn can't open its stomates as good as young corn leaves. And there's some pretty good evidence for that. This corn is also tasseling, and the tassels don't have stomates, so they get hotter, and they're part of what you see in the field of view. But if all the data looked like this, Apogee Instruments would be selling a system like this, but we chose not to because of enormous customer support. But this is only in corn, where we had lots of leaves. This is, by the way, this was funded by AgroFresh, and a subsidiary of Dow Chemical. We had all these sites across the Midwest. I was showing you data from Illinois right there. It worked quite well with corn. Some of these sites were cotton, and cotton represents a unique case. If I showed you this picture and said, what crop is that? I just told you the crop, but if I didn't tell you that, what if I said this was from 20,000 feet and that's a bunch of fruit trees? And if I showed this slide quick, you might guess it was. This is cotton. But look at the problems. Only half of the field of view is green leaves. We have hot soil, we have green leaves. Far in the distance, it's green leaves at an angle. Now we have the challenge of separating out leaf temperature from the hot soil. And I took all the slides out of doing that, but the bottom line is, oh, it's a big challenge when you are averaging different temperatures. You try to mathematically sort them out. There was this percent leaves, this percent soil. The data is really noisy in cotton. And any crop where you're seeing half leaves and half something else, it's a big challenge. It really helps to be having mostly leaves in the field of view. And when you do, this technique works quite well. And you can mathematically calculate average canopies to model conductance using it. Right now, there's no commercial systems. You got to buy the stuff, read the literature, and build your own. But you can do that. So now let's look at trees. Remember, we're working toward that Nobel Prize and how to measure tree hydration. So here's the picture. We mounted these high up. That's a cherry orchard. There's that same sensor that's going around the room, doing canopy temperature from the top of the orchard. Now, we pointed it way out to get a lot of trees in the field of view. Leaf-to-air temperature difference. Now, we didn't do canopies to model conductance with this yet, but look, when they this is irrigation. So irrigate, they're cool. They run out of water, and they get warm. Irrigate, and they're cool. So from this data, we can, of course, infer tree hydration, and there's the theory. It should look like that, right? And you get it, when it runs out of water, the leaves are equal to air temperature. And you irrigate again. There's a couple days that work pretty good, but look at these other days. It's inconsistent. This was with apples. And we don't fully know why it's inconsistent. Part of it's because of models for tree temperature as opposed to shorter crops. But you can see some potential for this, but it's not quite ready for prime time to just give it to growers. This is the whole orchard. The next slide shows a single tree. This is my last slide. And it sort of works, but not necessarily. There's the line sloping up. There's the line sloping up. Those look pretty good, but wait a minute. What happened here? We thought we were good, and now it went down. There's noise, and look at this. We should see the same things. So these techniques have been inconsistent in tree crops. The biggest single reason for it is we prune tree crops to let the light through the tree. So you point it at a tree, and it's seeing the ground through the tree. It's seeing the fruit, not the leaf temperature, the fruit temperature. It's seeing the stems and branches, and finally it's seeing the leaves. And so the leaves are the sensitive component, and the other is noise in the signal. And that's the big challenge. But this infrared measurements of automated infrared measurements of leaf temperatures are very effective for getting hydration and water status of crops as long as you have leaves in the field of view, mostly leaves. It's real hard to mathematically separate that out. So I'm going to stop here and turn this over to, well, Dan.
Thank you very much.